Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
And welcome back to another edition of Leave It In the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Well, we're back at it here again on Sunday. It's 11 a.m. here in Northern California. Just waiting for my co-host to call in. Shout out to Carmedic, all the guys from over there. my partners in crime, guys wearing the green. Anyways, we had some fights this Saturday. And you have Gary Russell Jr. taking out Johnny Gonzalez. You had Vance Modarossian get Charlo and one of the twins. And you know what? They were semi-entertaining. I got to admit, they were okay. I mean, it wasn't really anything there of significance where I was, like, jumping up and down. There's still a lot of talk about what's going out there in boxing. I saw that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is back into the mix. But, you know, man, unless he's going to get in with Carl Froch, I even put this out on, I think, in the social media world, that I just really don't care what he does. I think he needs to step it up. I know he's been out, and I know some folks are going to be defending him by saying, well, he's got to fight somebody, you know, and even though the guy that he's going to be facing is a tough customer, but it still leaves that fight that we all, they kind of teased us with, you know, with Carl Froch, and that's the kind of fight that I'm still waiting for, you know, to watch. We're going to be having Julian Ramirez come on to the show about noon. He's going to be talking about his upcoming fight. It's going to be his first 10-round fight that he's going to, you know, step into the ring with. So that should be a little interesting. I don't think we've ever had him on Leaving the Ring. So I told you we're going to get back and doing some interviews, and we're going to go back into that mix of bringing up upcoming guys. You know, I know in the past we were just bringing a lot of breaking stories. But I believe I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, with me. You there, brother?
Hola, senor. What's up, man?
What's up? Happy Sunday. I know.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it's so different doing a Sunday show than the other day. I got to tell you, I really got to motivate myself to get on the air on a Sunday.
It's, you know, having done theater for like a long, long time, all actors, all entertainers hate Sundays. Like, you do that Sunday 2 o'clock matinee, it's just a different energy. Day energy is, you know, it's just completely different. You're still kind of waking up. You're still shaking off the night before.
I know I'm shaking off the night before, man.
Oh yeah, happy goodness. Birthday. Thanks, man. Well,
Tuesday, right?
But,
yeah, Tuesday.
But
yeah.
People took me out drinking the last two nights, and as you know, I don't really drink. So, yeah, it's kind of brutal.
I know. I tell you what I had to go do, what I went to go do yesterday, and I did this when I was in Illinois. We went to this. There was like this little dive bar. Actually, there's nothing but dive bars at what is it called? The town that we're staying in is called Bethalta. I'm sorry, Bethalta. And then there's a town called Wood River and then Edwardsville, okay? And Edwardsville was actually a much nicer place. They had like real, they had franchise, you know, restaurants and bars out there. But where I was staying at, it was all these little dive bars, and they had this game called the cornhole. You know, where you throw like a bean sack into you know, a plywood that had a hole cut right in the middle, and then you try to get that. It's almost like horseshoe. If you played horseshoe, it's the same. It's kind of the same scenario. So anyways, so yesterday my partner calls me up, Kyle, and he's like, hey, do you want to go play? They're having a tournament for cornhole. Have you ever played it? And I'm like, you know, surprisingly, I have. So I went and did that yesterday, man. I hung out with a couple of the guys. It was his bowling team, and went and did that. And then I got home on time to watch the fights on Showtime. I didn't get a chance to watch the call Brooke won, but I definitely had a chance to watch Modarossian and Russell do their thing, man. Let me ask you, what did you think really quick about Modarossian?
I thought it was a very, very close fight. I kind of felt like Vonis won. I thought he was doing more fighting, kind of getting things done, and Charlo. But the sense I got, and just watching the broadcast, you know, and was that Charlo was supposed to win. More often than not, the crew, the television crew, was going. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was missing something. But you know, it seemed like the TV crew kept going to Charlo's corner, and the story was what Charlo wasn't doing or what Charlo needed to do. It really wasn't about Bonas last night, like at all. Like the whole broadcast just seemed to be, we're going to crown Charlo here, and they've been trying to foist the Charlos on us for a while. And that's just what it seemed like. And, you know, if it was going to be a close fight, Bonas just wasn't going to win. That was my sense.
You know, Charlo, man, I tell me if I'm wrong about this, but he's just a guy that is going to get by.
Guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything special out of the kid. You know, same thing with Vonzo Matarossian, man. I mean, here's a guy that he's got the size. He definitely has a look of a guy that can do some damage. But in my opinion, I think you're right. The fight was a lot closer. But, dude, he just doesn't know how to win convincingly on rounds.
Vonis?
He just kind of leaves it hanging out there so that the other guy can just do just that little bit more to take it away from him. Like, he just doesn't know how to lock it down. You know what I mean? Just,
sure.
just really
well,
hone,
yeah.
own up to that round, you know? And I think that was the problem there, you know, for him.
It's that thing of, but yeah, like, you know, I kind of felt you won, but I can see how they gave it to the other guy, you know? Although I thought, you know, I thought Vonis closed the show stronger. I thought his corner, you know, Charlo's corner seemed less, you know, sure of his victory. But, again, you know, only time I really got to see Vonis' corner is when his eye got hurt. You know, it seemed like everything else. I mean, if I could be wrong, you know.
Right.
I was putting on a suit and kind of going to the other room. A couple times, so maybe you know, in those breaks were the times that they were zeroing in on him. But you know, what I think is interesting, though, you know, about that broadcast and about where we are in boxing is we're talking about, you know, the PBC, the Premier Boxing Champions, and how they've pretty much bought the sport at this point. They've got all the channels, they've got all the networks except for HBO. But on Showtime, while it felt like a PBC and they mentioned the PBC, they didn't come out and say it, which I find a little more insidious. That it was like PBC Lite. It had all the trappings. They just didn't call it what it is.
Right.
And so to me, it was just the beginnings of showing another PBC champion, you know, Gary Russell, but also, you know, in Charlo, that's another PBC fighter that they're trying to push. Nobody is trying to be in the Vonis business. They're trying to be in the Charlo business. Those guys are undefeated. They're brothers. They got a good story. They got a great trainer. They're probably going to be around for a while. I think it's going to be hard to beat Charlo, even though I don't think he does anything that's really that spectacular. You know, I like the other.
He's just
Charlo
a solid contender. You know, I mean,
he's just a solid guy.
Yeah, he's a solid contender. He doesn't do anything that's really going to. He's not eye-pleasing. Let me just put it that way. He's not eye-pleasing
at all.
There's
no beginning, middle, or end to these
right.
young fighters. These guys aren't, you know, I've been spending time at an Undisputed Boxing Gym out here in San Carlos, and they always have, and actually I was at this other gym, 3rd Street Boxing, out here in San Francisco, and both of the gyms have old-school fights playing, and they just fight different back then. And that's not even that long ago, the 90s. You know, they were like,
they were
playing Sugar Ray Leonard fights, you know, and over at Undisputed. And I'm like, you watch Sugar Ray, and he's got all the same trappings. He's fast, he's slick, he's got, you know, all the punches, he's got all the defense. But he's also got aggression, and he's trying to hurt the other guy and trying to finish it out, trying to get you out of there, try to beat your body up, like, to set up the middle of the fight, where he'll start to sit down on his punches more and then even, you know, really go for it in the back end of the fight to finish you off. What I see with Charlo is still a guy that fights like an amateur. He kind of touches you, moves, occasionally lands a good shot, but he doesn't, like, land a good shot and then go, let me come in and land three more. He lands a good shot and is like, all right, I got, like, 20 seconds where I can kind of move around because I just scored some points, and then I'm going to go back in and do it again. You know, it wasn't a very exciting fight. It was exactly the fight I expected, to paraphrase Manny Stewart. I thought it would be a hunt-and-peck boxing match, you know, with a little bit of kind of fight mixed in, but not much. It was like they sprinkled fight over the top of a boxing match, you know, and then shook up the bag a little bit to make it seem like, you know, he'd really covered it in a fight. But it was just a boxing match and not that good of one. I mean, it was okay. It was close.
It was okay. I mean, look, the pressure that Matarossian was definitely, you had to put that down and note of what he was doing. You had to kind of judge that he was making the fight. He was coming forward. In that later half, he did become a bit more aggressive. But there's smart aggression, and there's just aggression. He was in the category of just aggression. Wasn't really too much intelligence behind that aggression. Wasn't really creating room. He wasn't putting aggression to open up some counter shots. He was allowing Charlo to stay in that fight. And that's what I really mean by he just doesn't know how to win rounds, in my opinion. He's a solid guy. He should be, in my opinion, I got to tell you this, Monterosian, in my opinion, she'd be a guy that's just a little bit step up above Charlo right now in terms of where they're at in their career. But unfortunately, he looked like a guy that wasn't completely ready to dominate a more amorous style Charlo. Just wasn't there. You know, I don't know where he goes from here. I have no clue where Monterosian goes from here, but I think it's safe to say that he's just kind of the gatekeeper of really to kind of regulate what other talent comes along and where we can place them at. That's what Monterosian is going to do. That's what, you know what? There's no shame in that kind of a fighter because it does continue your career in boxing and it puts money in your pocket and food on the table, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a take on a poker phrase, but it's like if you're looking around the table wondering who the gatekeeper is, guess what? It's you. You know, and I think I think that Vonis has become that guy. And there's no shame in that. Ray Mercer is one of my all-time favorite gatekeepers. You couldn't get past Ray Mercer, you know. And sometimes if you couldn't get past him, you got past him, like Lennox Lewis. But, you know, if you couldn't hang with him, what good were you, you know? And I think with Vonis, the thing with him is, like, he's got the experience. He's only 28 years old. He's been in with everybody. You know, I go back to
sparring
session with Chavez Jr. Yeah, I mean, he beat Chavez Jr. from pillar to post. Like, I was like, wow, whose media day is this? And where is that guy when the lights come on?
You know what I think happened, though, Gabriel? I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but there was a period of time for him where he wasn't even fighting, you know, where guys really didn't want to get in there with him. He was kind of shelved on, and he was kind of passed over on. And I think that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that when you're on hold for quite some time, sometimes that hold can be good because it works out for you because you haven't hit that peak. But sometimes that hold can be bad for you where your peak is right there and then. The juices are there. You got the juice to go out there and do what you're supposed to do. But then when they finally let you go because he was, you know, held back for so long, it kind of just gets left behind too. You know, and I think that's what happened with Monterosian, man. I think that he had so much ready for him to get out there and show us what he was really about and what he brought to the table that he left the table without the silverware.
I just don't understand. You know what? Why he doesn't just pour it all on, you know, and doesn't come downhill. He seems strong. He's got all the punches. He's got the experience. There's just something about him, you know. And what did you think of the moment where he got hit in that, got, you know, the headbutt?
I thought I liked Alvarez.
Went through it personally.
I liked the way he went through it, but I honestly gasped for a little bit when he started telling the doctor, "Well, I can't see. I was like, is he looking for a way out or what's going on here?" But then when he kind of showed the doctor, "No, I can continue. I'm just answering you honestly that my eye," you know what I mean? But he went out there and he fought through it like a warrior. And that's when he kind of turned it on.
I liked actually that he, because he was saying, "I can't see," and you're like, "Oh no!" And then he goes, tapped his other eye. I was like, "I can see out of this one," basically, you know. And I just thought that was awesome. It was like, you know, that's the fighter. That's the way you know you do it. Is you know, no, I'm going to keep going. You know, I'm not going to stop. I'm just telling you, you know, yeah, my eyes jacked, but no, I thought that it was every fight for Vonis at this point is an opportunity to get out of the basement. You know, and he's not really in the basement, but you know what I mean, to get out of that place that he's in where people think all he can be is just an also-ran. And I'm like, you know, I think that he's got more than that, but he doesn't fight with the urgency of that. You know, it's like, dude, you're 28, and maybe he'll start to figure it out in this year. Like 28, 29, I think, is the first time if you haven't, you know, done the normal, like, you know, in the box way of living, which is, you know, high school, then college, then career, get married, and then, you know, get divorced at 40 because you're reassessing your entire life. But if you're, you know, like an entertainer or an athlete, by 28, if you haven't done it, you start to realize your mortality. 28 and 29, 30, you start to turn a corner.
Well, you start becoming more cautious.
You either step it up or you step it down.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and
you know what I mean?
We'll see if he starts to figure that out.
Exactly. I mean, you know, when you get a fighter that's young, it's just they live life very carelessly. You know, they go through whatever they need to get, you know, they go to get where they're going, you know? So taking punches in the face, getting their eyes split open, living dangerously, it's all good because you're young. You're not thinking about the long term. A lot of these fighters don't. That's why we love these younger fighters when they come in and they just kind of leave it in the ring. But once you hit that 28, 29 peak, that's when you start thinking about, hey, I don't have much time left. You start overthinking what you're going to do. You start being overly cautious because you know that this fight could lead to an end of where you're headed to. So, you know, not to say that Monterosian, like, look, when I said he's a gatekeeper, hey, there's been some gatekeepers that have been able to get out of that, you know, out of guard and become the guy that everybody's looking at because something just kind of switched in his head. There's a strong possibility that Monterosian can do that, but I highly doubt it. You know, it's really hard to shake off that. It's not ring rust, but it's definitely mental, man. I would have to say it's definitely mental, Gabe. I don't know what you think, but I definitely think it's something mental there now that he just can't switch. He just can't do it. His body wants to do it. You see when he came back out after that, when the doctor spoke to him, I mean, his body went for it, but then his mind just kind of played him down, like, hey, dude, calm down here. What are you trying to do?
Yeah, sorry, I got a text that distracted me. I just think, you know, we're still talking Vaughnus here, right? Sorry, it was boxing related.
Right.
I just think at 28, 29, you're like Christian Ariola. For a second there, you started to see him be a little more motivated. You turn 30, you know, and you start to see the end of the tunnel. Like, oh, wait a minute, I don't heal as fast as I used to. You know, I don't do this as well as I used to. I think that's, that was a really great text I just got. I think that's what he needs to do. I thought Joe Goosen would do that for him. I thought he would really push him in that direction. But, you know, we'll see. You know, I just think with Vaughnus, you know, either he's going to be a sparring partner or he's going to be, that have that mentality that he always goes in there and does just enough to let the other guy win. Or he's going to say, you know, dude, I'm a former Olympian and I'm a rough and tumble fighter. You know, I can really get in there and be rough with the guy. I can also box. He can fight. A lot of guys can box. Not a lot of guys can also fight. But I just don't always see that from him. He has these moments, like you said, where he kind of just goes away offensively. I just think that there's a lot there.
Yeah, let's move on.
He's not tapping into, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I said. It's something mentally. Hey, Fight Fans, you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. Big shout out to our new sponsor for Leaving the Ring and the next round, Iron Gym. It's in Sherwin Oaks. I'll get you the address in a short bit. We're gonna have an interview about noon. We're calling Julian Ramirez into the show, and we're going to talk to him for a bit. But I want to move on to Johnny Gonzalez. He gets blown out by Gary Russell. Hey, I said this, okay? And I said, like, if Gary Russell can have some head movement, he definitely should have the fight in the bag. But if he didn't, he was going to get clipped. Well, he didn't move his head much, and he used what, to me, as how I perceived it, was Johnny Gonzalez. Okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'll read it right now. Johnny Gonzalez, check this out. To me, kind of rode the coattail of what he did to Morris, man. I mean, there was really no boxing intelligence in his part. Not taking nothing away from Gary Russell, but Gary Russell was the same dude that he's always is. He's got fast hands. He relies on those fast hands. Doesn't have a lot of footwork because he relies on the fast hands to land the punches first. No head movement. Johnny Gonzalez went in for the Gusko looking and thinking, hey, I blew out Abner Morris in the first round. Second round, I think it was the second round. I could probably do this to another guy that's there to be hit. And guess what? The tables spun around and turned. And he was the one that was down and out. He looked out of it. His legs were never underneath him after he got up from the second knockdown. And it was all Gary Russell Jr. So he obtains the featherweight title. But it still leaves me there standing going, hey, man, Gary Russell, dude, all that talent, you got to have some head movement. You got to start learning how to counterpunch, too, with that speed. You got to have the overall to be very competitive as a featherweight. A little bit after that, Rigondeaux's people tweeted out they want Gary Russell. Even Abner Morris threw out there that, you know, this guy's been talking smack about me. Let's make it happen. So really interesting fights for Gary Russell. But the one fight that's always going to linger over his head, the one fight that we're always going to ask him about is the Lomachenko fight. And guess what? Gary Russell, if you don't learn the other fundamentals that come along with your hand speed, you're always going to be vulnerable to a guy like Lomachenko. Not just to a guy like Lomachenko. Even though Rigondeaux's got to jump up to 126 at featherweight, I would honestly have to put my money with Rigondeaux. I don't think the punch would be there as it wouldn't be as evident, but it definitely his boxing skills would give him major trouble because of the fact that Russell needs a guy that comes to him and is much slower than he is. I don't know what your thoughts about that. And also, hey, let me real quick. You know, Golden Boy did a lawsuit because Johnny Gonzalez. You know, I'll get a little bit into that there, but I want to hear Gabriel Montoya's thoughts. And Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598.
That's interesting. You know, they didn't really talk about that on the broadcast, did they? The lawsuit.
No, they didn't.
Imagine that, Pauline Malignaggi, truth teller, only when it suits him.
Right.
You know, I think you broke it down really nice. I mean, you know, Gonzalez didn't stick to his strengths. You know, you got to be a little bit elusive. You also got to let your hands go and kind of go out there and be a little more aggressive with this guy. Crowd him. Don't let him use his speed. Track him down with a jab. Hit him with something early, you know, to make this guy doubt himself. What do you think about Gary Russell's claim that he'd been in the sauna for 3 days before Lomachenko, that he had a new strength coach, and the guy wasn't listening to him, and they basically just dried him out? Like, to me, I don't know if it was an excuse or not, but, you know, if you're calling yourself a strength coach and you're putting guys in the sauna for 3 days straight and ignoring that they're complaining that they don't feel good and you're not able to actually make them feel better, like,
oh, wow.
You're an idiot. You're not a strength coach.
That is
you're
great.
A fraud.
Isn't that great? You know, I walk into a gym and say, I can get you dropped 10, 20 pounds in 3 days. And you're like, great, okay, just pay me $800 and I'll get you down there. And he puts him in the sauna.
Yeah.
Wow, how come I couldn't figure that out, man? Yeah, I mean, look, is it an excuse? Yeah, of course it's an excuse, but I think it's a valid excuse, but it's also in his part. And it goes back to what we always say, Gabriel, is that fighters don't educate themselves, you know? So a lot of times the sympathy is kind of marginal because – dude, it's common sense. You're sitting in the sauna. Why are you not asking questions? You're paying for the service, and you're getting half-assed service. And then look at the result. What happened? You lost.
I'll tell you. Yeah, I watch these guys. Well, and I think Lomachenko had a little bit to do with his loss, but I mean, that's kind of unfair. It's always the, you know, but you got to hang your hat on something while you lost.
Right.
But, you know, I just think that it's funny, Dave. I'm getting more communications from people in the boxing industry Sunday morning that I have during our Thursday show. I'm getting all distracted. I got turned away from the computer. But I just think, you know, I spent a lot of time up here at Undisputed, you know, and like, it's interesting because I went to like Third Street Boxing right after I went to Undisputed. And Undisputed's kind of like, you've been there, it's more kind of a white collar boxing gym. But, you know, it's got a boxing gym,
right.
But then it's got all these heavy bags. It's definitely fighting focused, but it's also like, you know, white collar folks kind of go in there and train as well as fighters. But they've got all this high tech equipment. They've got hypoxicators to simulate high altitude that you can wear them on a mask while you do different training like the mitts or running on a treadmill or hitting the heavy bag. They've got that hypoxic dome, which, dude, I've just training in it just a little bit, I see a huge difference when I'm not doing hypoxic training. It's like way more energy, way more oxygen. It's just overall, like, and you don't have to do it that long. I did like 2 30-minute sessions 2 days in a row, and then trained without hypoxic out here in the city the next 2 days. It's ridiculous. There's the amount of energy your body gives out. And I watch these guys, and I'm asking them, you know, two of the fighters there, Jonathan Chicas and Tony Johnson, are fighting in BKB next weekend, which is a whole new format. You can't use ropes. There's no ropes. 17-foot ring, you know, two-minute round. So it's a different game. It doesn't even count on their boxing records. But talking to them about making weight, like, they have a whole different way of making weight out there. A lot of it is being in better shape, like, all year round, like always being kind of near your goal weight. But they're all taking, you know, vitamins, supplementation, more water. You don't hear anybody going, oh, I'm like 2 weeks out from my fight, I got to start cutting water, you know. And most of the other gyms
right.
you go to are old school gyms that there isn't a guy there that really is a nutritionist, that is taking blood samples and, like, you know, breaking down what parts are you low in, you know, what trace elements, you know, or minerals are you low in, you know, are you dehydrated? How can I tell? That's the thing. You know, we were discussing on Twitter earlier, me and a writer, Mark Raimondi, from Fox. He's a I think an assistant editor over there, and a fine writer, a good reporter. I wasn't arguing with him. We were just discussing the lack of barrier of entry to media in combat sports and how the coverage reflects that. But I would say the same thing for trainers and strength coaches, you know, quote unquote. You could just kind of come in and sell yourself well, and all of a sudden you've got this fighter. And, you know, getting somebody in shape that isn't a fighter versus getting a fighter in shape are two completely different things. For one, you have to peak out a fighter for this one specific night, but also 7 days before that you have to begin starving and dehydrating them in order to make weight. Which I think is just completely ridiculous and unusual, you know, for you know, in terms of getting somebody in shape. So I, you know, yeah, it seems strange to me that they would all come down to you've built your whole career to fighting for a title. You get in the toughest fight of your life, and you get a new strength coach who dehydrates you by putting you in a sauna. I wonder if he was wearing plastics too.
He probably was. You know what? Here's the thing too. It's mind-boggling when you think of these strength conditioning coaches, not just walking in the gyms, but in the overall, in high schools and colleges. Like, I have a friend of mine that, I won't mention his name, but we were talking about, because, you know, our kids wrestle, their kids wrestle, and how some coaches tell literally kids, hey, don't eat. Don't eat dinner. Don't eat lunch. Don't eat dinner. Just worry about breakfast. And then, you know, try to get in the sauna, sweat things out. And I'm like, these guys are telling people how to specifically lose weight without them really knowing, you know, the future causes of what this does, of not showing them how to properly lose the weight. You know, we got to get Margaret Goodman back on the show to kind of, you know, kind of break it down again, because we can go all day with how many people out there give the wrong information. And this is a real crucial thing. I mean, look, Gary Russell mentioning what happened him 3 days in the sauna. But at the same time, I think that would have been a bit more educational if you could have came in and said, this is why I should have looked into it, and this is what happened. And not even mention the fight against Lomachenko, saying, this is why I lost. If you would have left that part out, I think it would have been a lot – he would have been heard a lot further from fans and other people out there that were tuning in. You know, because what they focus on – most people do this and – you know, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, but a lot of times our attention span kind of latches on to a particular word or phrase. We don't listen to the overall speech of what somebody's saying. We just hear bits and pieces of what we want. And that's pretty much what happened with Gary Russell, because immediately you saw in the social media world, oh, this guy's full of excuses. You lost, bro. You lost. Get, you know, just get that through your mind. And we didn't really listen to what he was trying to say about what led into the fight, because of his weight draining process. It kind of fatigued him out. But if you would have left out the whole Lomachenko thing and just kind of spoke about his mess up of bringing on a strength and conditioning coach and how uneducated he was by bringing on this strength and conditioning coach, I think it would have spoke way louder volume than what happened that on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, everybody in boxing, it's tough. You know, sometimes you have an off night, you know, like I said, it's you're gearing towards one night. And if you're not on that night, you know, it's a pretty punishing day at the office. So I wonder. I'd like to see them. But here's the thing. Lomachenko's not in that universe anymore. So Gary Russell can say whatever he wants about that fight. It wasn't me, this, that, and the other thing. He's going to be the PBC, you know, featherweight champion. And that's
right.
Probably, you know, within the next year, it doesn't really matter. I mean, he lives in a universe where Vasyl Lomachenko no longer exists.
Good for him, though.
Yeah, luckily for him.
Luckily for him. I mean, look, we talk about Charlo. You talk about any of these premier boxing guys now. Here's the truth of that is that these guys got a little bit more. Like going back with Charlo, he's a solid fighter. And guys, you want to call in and tell us we're wrong about this? Go right ahead. 347-215-7598. I even invited a few people there on Facebook. I said, you know, this is a safe place to discuss boxing. Come on, leave in the ring. We can debate about particular subjects that happen in the sport of boxing. But so we're talking about Charlo being a solid guy. Not only is he just a solid guy and can get by with the solid tools that he brings, but he's also got a very solid promoter that has his back completely. And he's going to make sure, because the promoter's interest is all in on that corner who he's representing, his interest is so invested that you really think that they're going to put him in there with the possibility of losing on a scorecard? I don't think so. I don't get that sense and I don't get that feeling. Even with the broadcasting, like you bringing that up, that is the carpet, the red carpet that's been laid down for these premier fighters. Plain and simple. The broadcasting was bought out. The commentators are bought out. Why can't we say the judges could totally be bought out as well? It's happened many times in the sport of boxing, you know. So those are things that we all should be walking in and thinking about, you know. I hate to say this, Neil, but like somebody asked me at that tournament, they're like, you know, so what do you think, man? And I said, you know what, it's just harder and harder, man, to support this sport. You know, we're just sinking further and further down. I know it's a great thing that boxing is back on television, but it's also just another way of casual fans to go, see, told you the fight's fixed. I told you the fight's fixed. You can, I mean, casual fans now are starting to look like geniuses when they see a fight, because they're able to pick the fighter, you know, fairly quick, because all the broadcasting is focused merely on that guy, not the opponent that's stepping in.
Yeah, and that's the thing is. You know, when people, you know, there's always a cost for things. And when people, you look at, how excited everybody got. I mean, look back to, you know, several this thing won, you know, ago, storylines. Like, you know, there was a period where people said Golden Boy had destroyed Top Rank. Top Rank was over. They're dead. And then that didn't happen.
Right.
Oscar ends up retiring. But, you know, they're still like a solid promoter. And then the Showtime deal happens, and it's like Golden Boy's taken over. Showtime is going to beat up HBO, even though it's not like, you know, they acquired a boxer. They didn't acquire 30 million more subscribers, but everybody declared them having won. You know, I've always been like a wait and see kind of guy. And even with the PBC, I mean, on some level, like I was talking to somebody I really respect in the industry the other day, and we hadn't seen each other. We were talking about PBC. And like, well, it seems like the sport's been bought. And the people that are complaining, I mean, it's kind of a little bit late, you know. Like Steve and I have been talking, and you as well, have been talking about Al Haymon for years.
Right.
And the Tim Starks of the world were arguing, well, no, you know, just to be on the other side of our argument, as they usually try to be, guys like that, that don't know their head from their ass, but want to argue. They kept saying, oh, if you really add up all the dates of Al Haymon, he doesn't really have that much influence. And, you know, they're not coming across and saying how wrong they are now. Because, you know, while everybody was arguing about that, Al Haymon was buying up the sport. And now he owns it. He's got all the networks. He's got all the fighters, a large portion of them. And you're right, Dave. I think a streak that you have to pay attention to from those days where Tim was trying to prove, you know, numerically that, you know, Al Haymon didn't have any influence is the winning streak of Al Haymon in terms of his A-sides. When he's making the match, it's not a mandatory. Generally, the A-side wins in Al Haymon fights. That's not boxing.
Yeah. No, it's not.
That's basically a movie that you're making. It's like making another Avengers. Like, it's, you know, the reason why, like, the first Indiana Jones worked so well is because you didn't have any connection to the character. You had no idea if this guy was going to live or die. He kept getting in all these situations. It's exciting because you have no idea. He's probably not going to die, but you don't know.
It's like going to watch another Rocky film. Let's be honest. It's like going to watch another. You know Rocky's going to win. Hey, I don't want to ruin it for you, but hey.
Once they let Rocky win in the second one. Yeah. But really, once you get to the second one, you're like, they can't do another one where he loses. He's got to win this one. You know,
right.
And after that, yeah, Rocky III, he loses, but it's in the first 10 minutes of the movie. You're like, all right, you know, he's gonna get it back. That's what this one's about.
Rebounding.
Fourth one. Yeah, of course, you know, he's just got to work out really hard in the fourth one, and then he'll win. So, but yeah, it's exactly that, or the Transformers. Like, the lead characters aren't going to die. There's no suspense. These are just sequels to a really shitty movie. And so I do wonder about what we're seeing with the PVC. What are we selling? And again, it could be very early. As dudes are losing and guys are kind of developing, who knows what the PBC will look like in 3 years, you know, when Errol Spence, or, you know, 2 years, when Errol Spence is ready for prime time and, you know, we see Thurman versus Spence, you know, who knows? I mean, it could ultimately end up being just like the UFC.
The gamble is, can it make it 3 years? That's the gamble that I'm looking at. I'm looking at, can it make
years.
It to 3 years or 4 years? Exactly. You know, I mean, look, I saw this on Twitter. I forgot who tweeted it out and stuff, but they were like, you know, Queensbury rules. I like how they're comparing PBC to the UFC. What are you talking about? We've been saying that for years. That's what they were heading to. You know, these guys are now just trying to follow piggyback right on what we've been talking about. But going back to that, I mean, here's the sad part about it is that I said this a while back. Look, you put a lot of good fights. These are good fights, but where do we go from there? You know. What happened to 2016, 2017? Because you got to remember, who's paying for this is the networks are the ones that are going to suffer in the long run. Now, the networks are not happy. They're not generating the numbers of people to tune in. They're going to drop the sport. And then we're back to square one again. You know, I tell you what's more interesting right now is not the matches that are being put together, but the fights behind the closed doors, meaning the promoters fighting each other to stay alive at this moment and what Al Heyman is starting to create and do. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I do wonder, you know, like you say, 3 years, 4 years, what's it going to look like? You know, what is the sport going to look like? Everybody else seems to be moving business as usual, you know. Golden Boys, you know, developing young fighters. They got some good young fighters. Top Rank has got some nice young talent. Steve seems very sold on Felix Verdejo. There's also the kid from Avenal, you know, there's Joseph Diaz is out there, Oscar Valdez. There's young talent, and I think really quality young talent that's being developed by real good fight people that are not in the PBC. I mean, and that's the main thing, is that, yeah, you can buy up the sport, but what have you developed? Andre Berto, when he met his first real adversity, and that was Victor Ortiz.
Right.
He folded. You know, I mean, Luis Colazzo, I guess, would be the first real adversity. And a lot of people don't feel that he won that fight. And then the next real adversity was Victor Ortiz, a guy that most people would make fun of. I don't, but most people do. So that's the legacy. That's what they built. I mean, they got, like, what, 7 defenses out of Berto. But, I mean, really, what did they get? What, you know, what substance does he really have? I mean, he's starting to show some, you know, some substance, but I mean, he's supposed to beat Josecito Lopez. That's what Lopez is for him. He's not true 47 pounder, and I think Berto's getting pretty big for the welterweight division. So we'll see. You know, I want to know, are they going to take Errol Spence from fights that he can absolutely win? Is he just
right.
Going to jump up in class all of a sudden? And I personally think he can, but should he? And will that ultimately, again, dilute the product, dilute the skills, the depth, you know? Who knows?
You know, the thing is that Al Heyman comes from the background of the music industry, and it's exactly the way he's treating boxing is the way the music industry is, you know, which is it's who you know. It doesn't depend. It doesn't really matter on your talent. It's who you know and how, you know, and they're the ones that are going to get you out there because they're the ones that are going to dish out the most money to market you out there. Where the hardcore fight fans, we are just a speck in this little world of boxing. We're going to appreciate the guys that are fundamentally being brought up the traditional way, where the watered-down talent, well, they're going to be exactly where they're supposed to be because they got all the backing. They got the money man behind them. 100%, and that's what we're watching right now, guys. Is the monopoly starting to start to play out? The board game has started. It's halfway there, and a lot of these media people and these flyby fight fans are jumping up and down, so excited. Not excited for the sport, excited for the fact that they've been chosen to cover it. That's got to tell you something too, man. I mean, I wouldn't be that excited knowing that I can be controlled about what I'm going to say, what comes out of my mouth and away from my lips. I'd be kind of nervous about that, you know, because not only is he picking you, but he also can tell you when you can't come back in. Your job is never secured. And
yeah, I don't understand that. The thing we talked about is, you know, on one level, yeah, I'd like the sport organized. I don't like the sport organized by one single person, you know, and here's the thing, dude. I mean, look at what Richard Schaefer did with Golden Boy. On some level, you know, it seems criminal what he did. They settled for a bunch of money. And here, you know, Steve printed this the other day that Richard Schaefer and Bruce Binkow, who's the CEO of BKB, COO, but he was formerly of Golden Boy. He was the guy that worked on the contracts between Floyd, among other many things, but he worked on the USADA contracts for Floyd and Golden Boy. These guys now have a company, him and Richard Schaefer, called Integrative Sports out in Los Angeles. And the word is that they're going to be the promoter of record for Al. Now, one, you know, having a guy that closely aligned with you, like, okay, you be the promoter, I'll be the manager and we'll just work in collusion. That's just really going against the spirit of the Ali Act, the law. But also, had a reporter, I saw Radio Raheem did an interview with Richard Schaefer, and I thought he was pretty thorough in it. You know, I prefer a more combative style, but I really like Radio Raheem, and he does a really good job, and you should check out the interview. He's the only guy to walk up and actually say, hey, Richard, I'd like to interview you about what happened. But I think everybody – they should look at that interview and go, oh, well, somebody already asked those questions. Richard Schaefer, in my opinion, shouldn't be let back in the industry. He shouldn't be allowed to work in the industry after what he did. He showed that he's only out for himself. He's not to be trusted as a CEO, apparently. And yet the boxing reporters will let him back in and they won't say anything. And that guy is going to be a part of Al Haymon, who everybody's praising for organizing the sport and taking it over, and taking it away from Evil Bob and Lying Bob and, you know, and Golden Boy. And it's like, well, wait a minute, how did they do that? And I've never been of the opinion that it's just boxing. Remember that guy, John Chavez, came on the show and was like, hey, it's just boxing. Or, hey, right, that's boxing. Well, you know, particularly for media, but when you get in on the other end and you're brand new to the sport, just because everybody else is acting shady doesn't give you a reason to act shady. It's not an excuse to, oh, well, it's boxing, so you can, you know, people were fighting each other for money, so we can act however we want to act. I think that's really scary. So, I look at the PBC and I go, well, who's running it? What's really going on? You know, I'm hearing differing things about their drug testing program. You got Paul Lee out there really saying it's great, they're testing every week. But that's, again, if we're going to use the word random, if the fighters know they're being tested every week and you know you're probably not going to be tested more than once a week, and things can go out of your system within hours, that's not random.
No.
And I just don't trust it because on one level, I heard the first couple PBC cards, they weren't tested at all, Dave. There wasn't any testing. That's what I was told from very good sources. Now all of a sudden when we bring that out to light, I know Victor Conte mentioned it, I mentioned it a few places, all of a sudden they're getting tested like every week, and that's the story. It's like, which is it? Why isn't there transparency here? I just don't trust any of it. When people are like, look, trust us, we're doing a good job, that's the time we need to dig in and find out if that's actually true.
I mean, here's the thing with Richard Schaefer. Think about this. Back when Richard Schaefer was with Golden Boy, he was actually telling you what fights were good for you, that you didn't know the sport. even though he was brand new, he knew better what was a much better match make than you would, even though you've been following it a lot longer. That's what scares me. When you get these guys in suits that are looking at the amount of money they can make and how fast they can make it, they're not looking at longevity. Somebody, I saw this a few times. I've argued with a few people. Like, yeah, but look what Al Heyman's getting these fighters paid. Hey, dude, I'm not against that. They should get paid. But at the same
time,
that's
something I do agree with. Yeah.
I agree with that. I completely agree with that. They should get paid. But I also, if I'm paying to watch these fights, don't I have some type of say-so of who should fight who? I mean, here's another thing. I'll throw another ball out there for the fight fans that are listening to Catch. You're hearing a lot of people say, man, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, that's a fight I've been waiting for. I mean, it's a little too late, but I'd rather have it now than later, right? But the undercard is weak. Hello? Well, yeah, what did you think? You think they were going to give you a great stack card with that? I mean, when have you gotten a great stack card in the past 10 years? You know, when it comes down to the interest of one promoter, you're going to get what they're going to give you. And that's it. Sit down and shut up. That's basically what they're telling us, guys. Sit down and shut up. You're going to like what I give you. It's like sitting at home and you tell mom, I don't like vegetables. So what? You know what? Do you work? Are you paying the bills? No. So sit down and shut up and eat. But here's the thing. We are paying the freaking bills when it comes to boxing. We pay those damn bills. But we're still being told to sit down and shut up. I don't like that monopoly, man.
I'm never
crazy
about
it,
you know?
Yeah. I'm not crazy about something
like
that.
Like, you know what? I like something other than Starbucks. I don't like Starbucks. But,
right.
Jesus, it's on every corner. It's the only coffee you seem to be able to get. You know, they bought out the market. Is that a good thing? I don't think it is. There's way better coffee out there. You know? And it's – are the fights we're getting terrible? No. But, again, when you start to see that – you know, what good is a product when the A side always wins and when the coverage is always about selling you these guys? It just seems strange to me. It seems a little fixed to me. Even before the PBC started, there was fights that I mentioned on the radio. I haven't really pointed out which specific ones there are. That, you know, I'm not a fan of getting sued unless I'm, we'll get into that another time. But, I think it's incumbent on us to point these things out. But, I mean, I bet I mentioned on the show that there's been a few fights on these Heyman cards where I'm like, this looks a little fixed. This looks like one guy is backing off a little bit, and I don't know why. I've seen three I'm not going to name, but I just come readily to mind. And,
well, I've had people hit me up, ask me, you know, through our Leaving the Ring Gmail. They'll go, hey, do you think that John Molina Jr., you know, took a fall just last night? You know, Johnny Gonzalez.
Oh, really?
Hey, do you think that he took a step aside for this fight? He just didn't look. It just didn't look like him. And I was like, no, not really. I mean, it's Johnny Gonzalez, man. He's one of those guys can lose at any given day. I thought he fought the wrong fight. But here, look, man.
Yeah.
I mean, here's another thing too, which is like you got Lamont Peterson getting Garcia, okay? And trust me, that's a good fight. It's a good fight. And but this is the thing that I'm pointing out. After that fight happens, what do you think is going to go from there? You really think that Mauricio Herrera is going to get that opportunity of getting the winner? Do you think the other fighters there with other promotional groups are going to have that opportunity? Not really. And if it does happen, it's going to be a lot later than sooner. You know, this is just going to be circulating again, which we were seeing for the past couple years, man. Circulating with the same promoter over and over who can move his chess players where they want them to be because there's no risk. Why? Because he's playing himself. I don't like that at all. It shouldn't be like that. You know, there should really be opportunities for other guys out there that are not under one sole banner should have a shot at a particular fighter at the right time when the fans want the fight to happen. Now, I'm not saying that fans always know when is the right time, but I would say 90% of the time, we do. We know when is the right time for things to happen. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to be calling in our first guest on Leaving the Ring. Julian Ramirez is going to be calling in. He's going to be talking about his first time ever going 10 rounds. And it should be exciting talking to a young up-and-coming fighter here on Leaving the Ring. So stay tuned and all that. If you want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598. Hey, let's go back to the lawsuit with Golden Boy against Al Heyman, saying that he's conspired with the promoter of Johnny Gonzalez. And Johnny was under contract with Golden Boy still, and they were just kind of X'd out. Does that sound familiar, Gabriel? Wow.
Well, you know, I've heard a few people kind of say, you know, it's a bit of karma or this, that, you know, going after another guy's fighters. Everybody in this business does it, and that's not an excuse. It's just kind of like the fact. And so, I mean, you could just kind of like do 6 degrees of separation with everybody and say that. Let's just deal with the actual complaint here. Golden Boy wanted to fight the fight that we saw last night in, I believe, November. The fight was ignored, the fight offer by Gonzalez's people, at least is what the complaint alleges. And they kept revisiting it, Golden Boy did, and Gonzalez's people kept begging off. And then all of a sudden, you know, when Golden Boy gets cut out of the picture, and they claim that they have a valid contract. I think it was like 2 years or four fights, whichever happens first. Now the fights all of a sudden happens, and it's on Showtime, and Golden Boy's, you know, cut out of the deal. I mean, I think on some levels, Golden Boy is – I think they know exactly where they stand at this point. And everybody else is finding out, you know, this is what happens if you decide not to go along with the program with Al Heyman. I think Oscar was – and rightly so. He's a gold medal winner. He's one of the most storied champions in all of boxing history. He's a Hall of Famer, a legit first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I didn't even really grow up an Oscar fan, but I mean, I respect him. You know, he fought everybody, and he fought everybody when he wasn't in his prime too. You know, for him to go after the guys that he went after at that period of his career says a lot about him. So rightly so, he didn't want to be like all the other guys that are the Al Heyman sycophants and sell out his promotional company that he spent years building to somebody else. And yeah, I know people can call him a absentee owner and everything, but I mean, who among us doesn't know somebody with a substance abuse problem that lets things slide? Just because you're a millionaire doesn't mean, you know, that alcoholism still isn't a disease. You know, isn't a disease. So everybody just back off of that. I think this is legit. I'm really curious to see if Golden Boy pushes it all the way, what they can do here with this lawsuit. Because, you know, Kathy Duva, once they got what they wanted, there was no reason for them to have the lawsuit. I can understand that. And they backed off and kind of left it to the media to keep pursuing this stuff. Our media in boxing is not equipped to do it. You know, some guys can pursue it, but nobody really follows threads anymore. You know, nobody wants to be that guy that's always singing the same tune, like, you know, we should do better with anti-doping or whatever. Nobody wants to be that guy with Al Heyman. Because look it, I mean, if you don't like Al Heyman and you criticize him, look what happens. You don't get on the list to be, you know, accredited media for his press conferences. You don't get into the fights. You're not being offered opportunities to interview those fighters. That's a large segment of the fight community to be cut out of. So who's really going to do it? So I'm very curious about this lawsuit. I would like to see that. Hopefully it sets some sort of precedent. Because, you know, like I've said, you know, as people look at Al Heyman and say, this is, you know, the PBC is like, you know, the UFC of boxing. And mainly we've been saying it before it happened.
Right.
With that, you have to look at that class action lawsuit that's going on, the antitrust suit that's going on in the UFC right now. Because that's probably where this is headed. Or at the very least, you can learn how Al Heyman might be avoiding it. I'm sure he's probably read that suit and is learning how to avoid eventually getting caught up in one. I mean, case in point, in my opinion, integrated sports is the beginnings of that. You have a separate company. Therefore, it can't all be tied to you. Interesting stuff. Sounds familiar.
Interesting.
I mean,
right. Sounds really familiar.
We're going to let them stay in boxing and completely, you know, we're not going to hold anybody accountable. We're not going to ask any questions. I think people need to be all over this story. I think it's a huge story.
Absolutely.
I think people need to keep asking Floyd about the three positives or actually start. Another big story.
That's not going to happen.
Just keep. Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's true.
Hey, let's patch in our first guest here.
What happens first? People start asking that question or I get sued for bringing it up.
Right. Oh, probably the Sue part. You know, nobody's going to ask
the other
question. Right.
They're never going
to. Let's get in. Let's get Julian Ramirez, who's going to be fighting on the Oscar De La Hoya fight night in Los Angeles. He's a 22-year-old kid, 13 wins, eight by KO. Julian, you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, thanks for coming on Sunday.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
I know normally Sunday is like go to church day and then come home and have menudo and everything. So, you know, thank you for coming on, brother. Appreciate it.
I'm not eating this Sunday. I'm gonna hit the beach right now.
Oh man, rub it in, bro. We're over here stuck in the office and doing this show, and you're gonna go to the beach and everything. All right, so you're managed by Joel De La Hoya. First off, you got a fight coming up this next week, okay? Is this gonna be your first 10-round fight, right?
Yeah, my first 10-round fight and first main event.
First main event. So there's several things that are kind of on the line. Because I know in the last fight, one of your complaints was that, you know, you kind of walked away clean. You know, you wanted to have some markup to show that you were in the fight. You have that there that was weighing on your back. The second one is going to be the first time, 10 round, and now your main event. Tell me, what are the processes that you have to go through to ensure that if it goes 10 rounds, that you're well-conditioned to be there for 10 rounds?
I'm well conditioned. I know that I trained hard already for the fight. I sparred really hard with these 135 pounders. I'm ready to go. You know, I want to fight already. And my last fight, you know, it wasn't really a hard fight for me, and I didn't get bruised up, nothing. I felt like I should have fought like the next month or maybe in January. Like I fought in November, so. I feel like I just want to be more active, but then I think, like, you know, I have to listen to my manager and stuff. But I feel like I just want to fight, you know, because in the amateurs, I was used to fighting every month, every 2 weeks. So
Right.
I just want to fight.
When you go back to your manager, Joel De La Hoya, and you tell him, like, hey, man, you know, I'm not even bruised up. I feel like I can go back next month. What is the reasoning he says to you, hey, listen, slow down. Let me do my job, and this is why you shouldn't fight next month. What do you tell you?
Well, I think a lot has to do with a lot of the promotional that was happening, that was going on, and you know, my manager was just looking for the best fights for me. Like, I mean, the best time to fight. You know, I don't know his reasons that much, but I just think because a lot of things are going on. You know, I think he's just waited a little bit and then put me on.
See, we were talking about that earlier. Yeah.
That was all right in the shakeup. Yeah, we were just discussing it. Welcome to the show.
That's another thing, too, where people don't realize that that whatever that's going on with this monopoly, it does affect other fighters like Julian here that, hey, he wants to fight. He's ready to fight, but you got all the little hokey-dokies out there doing their BS. And it's affecting this guy's career of moving along and being brought up the right way to be prepared for this big moment. And he's got to sit back and watch these other guys play fiddle, you know, with his career. That kind of sucks. But anyways, you got the main event. You got this main event happening here. Being so close to home, because I hear this is going to be the first thing to be really close to home, and it's going to be, you know, it's all about you. What is the pressure like for you to do something like that? Or is there any pressure, being that you've been in the amateur career and, you've been a fighter for quite some time? Is there any type of pressure for you?
Not really. I mean, I don't feel no pressure. Maybe I will, like, the night before the fight or the night of the fight a little bit. But right now I just feel, like, excited. Like, everybody's... You know, all my friends and all my family are hitting me up, you know, asking me, are you ready? Like, we're going to the fight. We got tickets. My soccer team, they're all going, you know. Everybody's going because it's right here. It's my first fight in L.A. too, so I have a lot of people going to the fight. And I'm not feeling no pressure. I'm just feeling, like, happy already, like, you know, shadow boxing in the restroom and stuff like that, in the kitchen, just. Ready to go already.
It's got to be exciting, man. Gabe, you got any questions for him?
I do. Yeah, I've watched you quite a bit. I really enjoy your style, man. I'm a sucker for a southpaw, but I think you're an aggressive boxer puncher. I like watching you fight. I'm curious though. I was reading about you. You're the great nephew of the late Renato Hernandez. But you said in the interview that's not why you got into boxing, that you guys would just talk about soccer. So I'm curious, how did you get into boxing, if it's just a coincidence?
Well, I got into boxing because I always played other sports, and I was always competitive. So I was kicking it with hanging out with my cousins, and one of my cousins, he was training. He was already training, and, I was always aggressive, so we would, wrestle and stuff like that. And then, I don't know, we took it to the ring, and we went at it, and then that was it. After that day, I did good, but I gassed out, and everybody was telling me, you should train and stuff like that. So I just started training. I got my win up, and next thing you know, I'm fighting my first fight, in a state tournament.
What is it about fighting that you like?
I don't know. Well, I've always been aggressive, and I like it. I like punching people in the face, and I don't know, something. I like punching them in the face, and I don't really like getting punched in the face, but it comes with the sport. But it's fun for me. It's like therapy. I get heated kind of quick, so when I go to the gym, I'm after the gym, I'm always calm, it's my therapy.
I always tell people too, man, that I've never stepped in the gym or laced up gloves. I always say, hey, you know what? It's the greatest feeling when you can punch somebody in the face and there's no repercussions after that, and they're not going to have the police outside. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I like
it.
I
agree.
Yeah.
It kind of cools you out for everything else,
Right.
Yeah, I get heated, I get mad. I used to have a bad temper as a little kid, and I think boxing really turned that around, because I would be mad sometimes in the gym, or mad before going to the gym, and coming out the gym, I feel fresh, or I would either feel fresh and happy, or just super dead, super really really tired, and have no time to be mad, just go to sleep.
Right, right. I mean, look, and you get to hit people in the face, and you get paid to do that. That's the real perk of it there for you, man. But let me ask, have you watched a lot of tape of Hidalgo? Or do you watch any tape of any of your opponents? Or do you go in there just kind of winging it and gathering your game plan after the first round? Or do you have a game plan by watching tape of your opponent? How does that work? How does that process work for you?
I saw his style. I didn't his whole fight. I saw two rounds with him, or a round with Mandaleno, and then I saw two rounds with Jojo Diaz, and I don't know, I saw his style, I saw he's a brawler, he throws a lot of hooks, and I don't really study, I don't really focus on that, because I feel like if you focus on, he's going to fight like this, maybe he might change it the day of the fight, but I saw a little bit of what he does, and I don't know, he's just another fighter, he's another fighter, he's dangerous, because he has knockouts, so that means he got power, but I'm going to be ready for whatever he brings that night.
Beautiful, man. Well, this interview is brought to you by Iron Gym at 14-548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherwood Oaks, man. Be sure to check them out. Go ahead, Gabriel, what's your question, bro? I'm sorry.
You talked about your heroes growing up, in an interview with Anson Wainwright on Ring TV, being Benito Lopez and Mike Tyson, which it makes a lot of sense watching you fight, because you're a technician, but you're aggressive. Do you feel like at this phase in your career that your style has really come forward? You've had like 80 amateur fights, you've beaten top guys like Joseph Diaz, Eric De Leon, you've fought all those guys in the amateurs. How do you feel about yourself as a fighter right now, where you're at?
Call got dropped for some reason.
I can be a little long-winded.
I think I did something by accident. Was touching my phone.
Stop touching
me. I know. Let me get him back on. I like to touch myself. I don't know if you remember that song. That was like a 90s song.
That's funny. Somebody asked us on Twitter at boxing_reality. Listening to you guys on the subject, do you think PBC guys get told to hold back for the first six rounds? He cited Bruner Molina and Thurman Guerrero as his examples. I'll say this. It feels like somebody's telling the opponents to not use their jab. You know, B-side, don't use a jab for like, I don't know, throw like five jabs around just to make it look good. That's what it seems like to me sometimes. I mean, there's this absence of jab all through those fights. It just seems so easy for the A-side to do what he wants to do. Is he back?
Yeah, he is. I believe we got Julian. Julian, you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, man, sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. We're talking about, like, you know, who you liked growing up to watch, and Finito Lopez and Mike Tyson is who you listed. How do you feel about your style at this phase? Do you feel like you're fully formed, that you understand who you are in the ring and what you're trying to get done?
Kind of, not really, because, I feel like the better the opponent, the more chance I got to show off my skill. Like, I feel like the guys I've been fighting, like, I mean, they're all right, you know, they're good. But I feel like if I fight someone real, real good or real good, you know, I could show off my skill, because there's been times where I spar real good competition, and, you know, I feel like I'm my hardest critic, so if I spar with someone really good and don't do something, I'll be like, you know, I should have done this, I should have done that. So I feel like in a lot of the sparrings I do, I show off head movement, or my favorite is to work off the ropes. You know, people haven't seen that from me, you know. But I think in a couple more fights, you know, when fights are getting tougher, people are going to see that. And they'll probably appreciate more skill from me, more of my skill.
You train down in SoCal. Which gym are you out of?
I'm training in my trainer's garage right now.
Rafael Sarabia?
Uh-huh.
Okay, wow. Okay. But you, yeah, being in SoCal, you guys, you know, you guys have access to a lot of top talent. I mean, all the top guys are out there if you need sparring. But I saw that you went overseas and you trained with Scott Quigg, heading into that Randall Monroe fight. Can you talk a little bit about that experience? How is it over there compared to how it is over here? You know, in terms of the work and you know, the way, the, just like the behavior of the fighters, is it any different?
I feel like they take. Well, I'm not sure if it was just the gym or if it was just Scott Quigg, but I feel like they train harder. I feel like they want it more. You know. I feel like over here, you know, like, I guess they're trying to, like, because over there, European style, you know, they don't hit the body and stuff like that. And I feel like over there, they're trying to learn, you know, oh, we're going to hit the body, you know, we're going to do this, we're, you know, I feel like they want it more, you know what I'm saying? Like, not that they want it more, because I know every boxer, you know, wants to win and stuff like that, but I feel like just, like, they train different. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's not the normal
urgency?
Training. And
like,
I don't know.
More
I like it. I like
it.
They were dedicated.
Right. Huh. Right. That makes
I've
sense.
Watched
I mean, you know,
train too.
Right.
I watched him at the wild card, and yeah, he's. I remember always watching his. He has like an intensity to him. Really, really, just like next level. You know. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, and I mean, being right here, like, and Southern California, like, I mean, I love it because I get the best sparring, like this fight, like, I sparred with Alex Luna, you know, he's like 17-0. I sparred with Ronnie Rios, you know, he's a tough fighter. I sparred with some guy too. I forgot his name. He's Peter Petrov, or he's fighting. He's fighting the Classic Bowl in the ESPN.
Right,
yeah,
right.
These guys are 135s, 140s, you know, and you know, I'm sparring with these guys, and I sparred with some other guy from Colombia. He has like 5 wins, 5 knockouts right now, and he had like 300 amateur fights, and they're all 135s, you know, and I sparred with him, And, you know, I got black eyes. I got a black eye in training for this fight. And, you know, I gave black eyes, you know, I'm ready for the fight. Like, these guys, I get quality sparring right here in California.
Yeah, well, you know, you get quality sparring when you sparred Peter Petrov and you don't really remember his name.
Yeah.
That's pretty great, though. I mean, that's access to so many different styles, man. That's the way you should be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Julian, you're a featherweight yourself, Paul. Let me ask you this really quick, you know, because you mentioned this a little earlier about what's going on in the landscape in boxing and the management problems or promotional problems that's happening among a lot of fighters right now. You're seeing guys like Gary Russell Jr. and other featherweights out there getting that primetime segment there. Does that concern you a little bit that you may not have a chance to ever face these guys? Do you think that you're kind of being robbed of having the opportunity to show what you bring to the table because their promoter's not willing to play ball with yours?
Yeah, I mean, like yesterday, like, you know, Gary Russell won. So first, you know, thought that came to my mind was, you know, I'm not going to be able to fight for the WBC no more. And, you know, that the green belt, that I've always wanted the green belt, you know, and I feel like that sucks because, I mean, maybe I will have a chance, you know, who knows, but I feel like, you know, it's it. Like, I'm not going to fight for a WBC belt unless he loses the belt to somebody else and, you know, quote unquote gets a shot. But I feel like it sucks because I don't think boxing should be like that. I think, you know, everybody should fight everybody. And if you have your promoter, like, well, you have your promoter, but let everybody fight. Like, I don't think it should be like, oh, you know, you're with one promoter and you're only gonna fight the fighters that we have. Like I feel you know, you should fight everybody. You know, all the promoters should fight their fighters and see who got the best fighters.
You got to kind of look at it like these guys that get that WBC, and if they're with the PBC or Al Haymon camp, they kind of hold hostage to these bouts, man. It really sucks. I mean, in your part, I mean, it's frustrating for me as a fight fan, but I'm certainly much, much, much more frustrating for you as a fighter knowing that these guys have a bout and they're holding it hostage that you can't even get close to it. That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. And then, like, I don't know, man. I get frustrated because I feel like, you know, like I look at these guys and I feel like, you know, in a couple fights I could be fighting these guys, but not no more, you know, because of all the stuff that's happening. And I feel like, oh, you know, I could fight for a title, but now you don't even know what's a championship belt no more now these days. Now, like, these days you don't even know because everybody's like, oh, you know, silver, bronze, pink belt, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You don't even know who's champion now, like. Everybody's a champion now. Everybody has a title. Like, you don't know who's who. Like, it was back then. I want it to be like it was back then, you know? Right now, there's too many titles out there, and it sucks. Like, I think it's a bad thing.
Right.
At the very least, when there was, like, you know, in Oscars Day, you know, when, like, Trinidad emerged, they fought. You know, Corte was available, and, you know, they fought. It seemed like if you're a top star now, it's an excuse to just avoid people. And like, no, I'm going to fight who I'm going to fight because I'm a star.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
though,
I mean, I get the whole business side. You know, like, you know,
you're
a boxer. I feel bad for the boxers that, you know, have had good careers and then end up with no money. So I mean, I understand, like, for these boxers that say, oh, you know, more about the business side. And, you know, at the same time, for me it is, you know, I want to make money too. But, I mean, if I've already made, you know, a couple hundred thousand, a million, you know, that should be enough money for me to have invested and buy my house and, you know, buy a car so I could have it paid off already, you know. And if I was ready to have that money, I would want more respect. You know, I would want to go out there for the pride, like, for, you know, I would want to be the champion of the champions, you know. These guys, I don't know if they don't think the same way I do, but I think they should. I think they should fight everybody. Like, if they're champions, they should fight for another
right.
belt. You know, they should unify the belts.
If you claim you're the best, you should fight the best. And that means everybody that's
exactly.
even outside of your banner and stuff. So let me ask you this, man. On the realistic level, of the guys who you could fight if you're successful against Hidalgo in your hometown and the main event. Who are the guys that you're looking at to kind of further your career? Who's the guy that's in front of you right now that's going to be the barrier that you got to get through or around in order to get to where you're going?
Well, I mean, I know I won't get, like, a straight title shot or anything like that after, so whoever is, like, higher ranked than me, I want to fight them, you know. I just want to climb in the rankings so I could get closer to a title shot. I don't even know who's in front of me in the rankings right now. I'm probably, like, in the 90s or 100, you know. Whoever's in front of me is gonna move me up. I want to fight them. I want to move up the ladder.
Well, there you go. You got Julian Ramirez right here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Man, I want to thank you again, brother. Go enjoy that beach where we're sitting here talking boxing, man, and take a dip for us. You know what I'm saying, brother? Hey, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it, okay? You have a good one. And,
okay, thank you.
Wish you all the success, bro, on Thursday night, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much. Take care, man. The beach. The beach sounds nice.
Yeah, the beach. Julian Ramirez on Leaving the Ring. This interview was brought to you by Iron Gym in Sherwood, California. Go check them out. First week is for free. I'll give them a shoot. I'm going to shoot out the address right now to you. I had to go back to my notes really quick. I got a bunch of stuff just laying around, man, on my table right here, dude. It's just, I got
a
mess.
You've been traveling for a while there.
Yeah, I've been a traveling guy, and I've been a mess, man. But anyways, 1454 8 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. Zip code is 91403. The Iron Gym. 1 week is for free. Go in there. They got some personal trainers to go one-on-one. We have a description of the classes and the costs on our website at leavingtheringradio.com. But give them a ring as well. The number is on the website as well. And call them up and get yourself in there, man. If you want to get in a boxing condition
workout,
you know, hey, you want to train like the pros, get in there and do your thing at the Iron Gym. Anyways, hey, fight fans, it's almost close to the end of our show. And I'm getting burnt out. I don't know. I think we've kind of covered everything that's out there right now. Gabriel, what do you think?
I believe we have broken it down. I mean, we may want to look at next week's matchups, you know, because now we're on Sunday,
yeah.
So we're trying to, you know, I'm picking Julian Ramirez to win that fight. He's an exciting young fighter.
He is.
I'm a sucker for
a
southpaw, but I especially like, a boxer puncher. It's always fun to watch. Speaking of Peter Petrov, he's fighting Gamaliel Diaz, lightweights, 10 rounds on ESPN2, Friday, April 3rd. God, these names.
That's a keep busy fight, let's be honest.
Yeah, I expect Petrov to win. Taras Shalustuk versus Juan Rodriguez Jr., welterweights. Yeah,
right.
Say that fast three times. But here's the big one. Saturday, April 4th, Adonis Superman Stevenson versus Sakio the Scorpion Bika. Well, he gets stung by the Scorpion. Pepsi Coliseum. Bika, quietly a Heyman fighter, just
quietly,
kind of there.
Right, and quietly saying he's going to knock out Stevenson. I don't know where he got that from, but that was the pep talk on Showtime, right?
I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Stevenson's got problems.
It's going to be an ugly fight. It's going to be a really ugly fight unless Stevenson can get that distance to throw that right hand of his. I don't know. I don't know. Paper.
I'm going Stevenson, but it's going to be ugly, like you said. It's Sakio Bika fights. They're never smooth. They're just brutal. So I'm going Stevenson decision. I'm going Beterbiev by knockout over Gabriel Campillo.
I think Gabriel Campillo is already, he should be out of the sport. He shouldn't be fighting. He's really shown a lot of signs of wear and tear. Hey, going back with Stevenson and Bika, man, let me tell you this. I think it's going to go to decision as well. I don't know if Stevenson can land that big right. He should be able to hurt Bika, but I don't know if he's going to be able to finish him because Bika's really, when it comes to the grappling department, he's got it locked down. He knows how to really eliminate your speed by tying you up and being just right in your chest. He showed that with Anthony Durrell. So I kind of expect a little bit of that there. But here's the thing, that the body frame of Stevenson is a lot wider than Anthony Durrell. So that's going to be the big question. Can he get his arms wrapped around Stevenson? And how much more muscle is Stevenson going to have over Bika? Because Bika's not a true 175-pounder. He's a guy moving up from 168. Not sure if that's going to help him packing up those pounds and being, I believe it's what his first fight at 175. So it should be all Stevenson. It should be a Stevenson night. And if Stevenson does his homework and looks at what Bika brings, he could probably catch Bika with a nice right uppercut and then finish it with a left hook and then was followed by a straight right. But I just don't see that happening. Why? Because, like I said, Bika is a very talented person in tying you up. But
so let me ask you this.
Things happen. Go for it.
Will the fight – here's two questions. Will Bika use the jab? And will Bika not start throwing punches until after the sixth? Two things to just keep an eye on.
That is true.
That seems to be developing in PBC on CBS this week.
Putting bullshit
pattern within the,
right. It's called putting
PBG.
Bullshit on a channel. Putting bullshit on a channel. PBS. Whatever. Anyway.
That's funny. We'll have to figure it out. Yeah. Premier Boxing Comps is what I've been calling it because I've been giving away so many tickets.
Right.
I just think that they, keep an eye on that because, you know,
not
yeah,
an
you do
intriguing.
Have with...
Listen, not an intriguing matchup. Even on paper, it's not very intriguing.
Stevenson and Bika? No.
Yeah.
Like, we could be drunk at 3 a.m. playing Fight Night and have run through all the classic matchups and be like, dude, let's play Stevenson Bika. Like, no.
I'm a pass on that.
Not even
right?
on Fight
yeah.
Night.
I know. That's terrible. You know, and that's the quality that everybody was jumping up and down about. No, I'll pass on that fight. I'll probably DVR that, to tell you the truth, unless, I don't know. We've seen stranger things happen in boxing. Anyways, fight fans, hey, man, we appreciate everybody coming on the show, calling in. We'll be back Sunday around the same time as usual here, 11 a.m. That's where we're going to start. Or we go a little early. I don't know. I know me and Gabriel are going to discuss that.
And let me just say this now, texting during the show or actually emailing during the show. We were trying to get her on this week, but we will have Margaret Goodman, Dr. Margaret Goodman of VADA on next week. She was there for, Nevada had a conference on performance-enhancing drugs and what they should do about it. The Nevada Commission did this week. She spoke at it, so she's going to come on, discuss that. Discuss some of the things we're talking about, dehydration, the malnutrition, lack of education within the sport, and what we can do to fix it. So that'll be next week, brought to you
there
by
you
Iron Gym Boxing, or Iron Boxing Gym, something like that.
Remember, don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer. Enjoy your weekend with the finish of Sunday. That's the end of your weekend, and then back to reality. Everybody hates Mondays. See you guys back here on Sunday on Leaving the Ring Radio. Your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.